Welcome to the Derek Loudermilk Show. This is episode 394 with Dan Willis. In today's episode, we talk with Dan Willis, who has been many things. He has been a collaborator of Marcel Vogel, the IBM crystal researcher who created the Vogel cut quartz crystal. And we're going to get into some of the science around how Vogel cut crystals do what they do, their connection between breath and consciousness and intention and healing. And Dan was also one of the original witnesses of the Disclosure Project back in 2001. They had more than 50 witnesses that basically disclosed to the world that there are extraterrestrials in contact with the government, that we have UFOs, that we have free energy. And this was actually the biggest event at the National Press Club in history, and yet nobody heard about it. So get ready for an episode full of amazing stories, science, geometry, mathematics, and a little bit of guidance from extraterrestrial grad students thrown in. So without further ado, here is Dan Willis. Dan Willis, welcome to the show.
Hey, Derek. Great to be on your show.
I would love to start by hearing a little bit about Marcel Vogel. I have a few scientific heroes. Richard Feynman was one. Marcel Vogel is one. And a few months ago, I got to interview Stefan Schwartz, who spent time with Feynman. And, it's so cool to have you, because you had firsthand experience meeting and working with Marcel Vogel. So I'm just curious, what that was like for you to be in touch with him.
Well, it's interesting. Way back in 1977, I had an ET interaction experience with a being that the Kundalini opening. It was interesting. I find out, decades later that at the exact year, Dr. Marcel Vogel was on a sacred mountain in India having a Kundalini opening experience as well. I had no idea. Anyway, to make a long story short, the being projected in sphere, a sphere which had geometry going into it, one like platonic solid into another, like started with the star tetrahedron, and then isosahedron, dodecahedron, going into infinity and came back. And it was basically kind of a download of what the matrix was about. And at this time, I had no idea of what platonic solids were or sacred geometry. It left a burning passion in me to try to understand the matrix. And it seemed that quartz crystals, since the vast spans of time and different cultures, all had this reverence to this clear stone that appeared to be an indication of an advanced science that we don't fully have an understanding of. And the only person that was really doing any not woo-woo stuff, but full-on with planning on doing a laboratory and getting into the science of it, was Dr. Marcel Vogel. So I contacted him, and I drove up from San Diego up to San Jose in the middle of a storm, knocked on his door. It was in the evening, and he welcomed me in. And I said, I'm fascinated about your work. I need to learn more about what you're doing. He said, you're from another planet, aren't you? And I said, I don't know about that. Anyway, I sat down on this couch, and there was a doctor. He was working with about two dozen medical doctors in San Francisco Bay Area, teaching them these techniques that he developed. He turned off the lights and played classical music for beautiful classical music for about, it seemed like 20 minutes or something like that in the dark. And then when we started the talk, and a knock came on the door, and a woman with her daughter came over and heard he was doing this healing work. And she had this tumor that was on her ankle that was sticking out about a half an inch. And as the doctor and I observed, he did his procedure of, with the breath and the crystal, actually dematerialized the tumor in front of our eyes. And that left a lasting impression that this man has understood something and has opened up a key in understanding about these sciences. And so, you know, he invited me. At the time, I was working for the Naval Electronic Systems Engineering System on all the, you know, the Navy's electronics equipments and everything like that. And so he invited me to be a research associate. And so I helped procure laboratory equipment, you know, like spectrophotometers and things like that, because he was about to retire from IBM and open up this full-on laboratory. IBM gave him the electron microscope that he put together from scratch. And I also traveled to the mines in Arkansas. That was a long trip. And gathered, you know, whole huge batch of crystals, which I delivered. And that was used for, you know, for the first doctors for cutting these. How all this came about was that in the 70s, he had to give a creativity course to the engineers at IBM. He had about 30 engineers, very left brain thinking, you know, engineers. Mm-hmm. And he was not a left brain thing. He was a creative genius. He created the magnetic coatings on hard drives, red and blue phosphors on color television, liquid crystal systems he developed, like we use on our displays and so forth. He had about 140 patents. He was a creative genius. And he had to do this course. So he was trying to figure out what to do for creativity. And he read this article about Clive Baxter, who was a CIA polygraph expert that was working with plants. Mm-hmm. And so he crumpled it up and threw it in the trash, and he thought, oh, this is garbage. But then he thought, well, no, this might be a good experiment, you know. And so he dug it out, and he hooked up a split leaf philodendron and a script chart recorder that's recording the response. He burned a leaf and he got a response on the chart. And then the moment the thought formed in his mind, the instant the thought formed in his mind, it squiggled. He said that squiggle changed his life. And so he was studying pranayama yoga, which was, you know, the science of breath and breathing. And he found that when he pulsed his breath, you know, like through the nostrils, like that, that with the intention and thought, he got a much greater response. Now, he was able to do this from 7 miles away from the laboratory with his colleague and psychically tune into the plant. And then he also went to Prague, Czechoslovakia, on the other side of the planet, and tuned into the plant and was able to make it squiggled. You know, he said, you know, the inverse square law of distance doesn't apply. It's like instantaneous. So he was doing a lecture and about, you know, the plant communication. It was written up in the book, The Secret Life of Plants. And a lady gave him a crystal, and he thought, oh, this is woo-woo stuff, right? And so he tried working with the crystal, and a colleague at IBM had a back problem, and he used the crystal, pulsed it, and it alleviated the back problem. You know, he said, oh my God, you know, I've got to figure out a way how to make this, you know, in nature, you know, the crystals, you know, the crystals grow like this. Hmm. And all the angles of a crystal are the same as the Great Pyramid in Egypt, which relates to the golden mean ratio and everything like that, that acts as a transponder in the matrix, you could say. And so,
can I pause you really quick? Just to clarify, he was testing whether the plants would respond to his thoughts of, right. He was like, was he projecting that he was going to burn them, or what was he doing to try to get the plants, and they're hooked up just like an electrode, like a lie detector type electrode thing.
Right. Right. And yeah, as soon as the intention of his thought formed, the plant reacted. And so he had a dream. He got a lot of stuff in dreams, how to do things. In fact, that's how he created the magnetic coating on the hard drive, as it came to him, and how to do this the sticky solution, you know, that goes on the hard drive. Mm-hmm. And so it came to him like in a dipyramidal form, like this type of crystal, where it's like the tree of life in the Kabbalah, you know, is like the unmanifest from, you know, the source of all things down into the earthly manifestation. And so he started cutting the crystals in this form. One end was the 52 degree angle, you know, 51.843 to be exact. And the other end was a 60 degree angle or thereabouts. He didn't know, and we'll get into that later, about a being from another world, from another civilization, thousands of years in advance of our understanding, uses the same geometries on their crystals that they use. So he cut this, and his concept was that, you know, with a laser, for example, you have two mirrors, right? And you have a ruby crystal, you photon excite it, and it starts oscillating back and forth. And each subsequent, because it's all in phase, each subsequent oscillation builds upon itself. So you have this incredible energy that's going on inside of a laser. One mirror is 100% reflective, the other one's 1%. And that 1% of the energy that's coming out one side is strong enough to cut through steel. So this cohering is very, very powerful. And so the quartz crystal, the way he was cutting it, was acting as a means to cohere the energies of mind. And so what he was doing is he's developing procedures using breath and connecting in with the physical body. And you understand that our reality is multi-dimensional, many, many densities of frequencies, the quartz crystal is resonant simultaneously at the same time in all these different dimensions. So it acts as a bridge between these dimensions. And so the higher forms the lower 3D physical form that we are, not the other way around. And so when you're able to go in and link to that higher pattern, let's say you have a dissonant pattern, whatever the problem is in the body, if you're able to go in there and release that, amazing transfer, like the tumor disappearing in front of our eyes, amazing transformation. I used it a number of times. Marcel cut that crystal as a gift for me, you know, for helping with the laboratory and everything. And first time I ever used it, I was getting on the plane back to San Diego, and there was a football player holding his knee in pain. He just had surgery, right? And so, you know, I'm thinking, well, I've been given a gift. And so I said to him, well, I'm not a doctor. I'm kind of an experimental scientist. If you like, we can try some experimental procedures, you know, the first time, you know, using it. Mm-hmm. And so I did the procedures that Marcel showed me. And the guy got off the plane, and he was pointing from his parents. He said, that guy, he fixed my leg. You know, I was like, but I didn't do it. I facilitated him, you know, healing himself, because I facilitated that.
And, so I definitely want to. I want to ask a bit more about the healing process, but I also just love to hear, like, so I know you helped him set up the laboratory. Like, what was he like as a person for you, or what was your relationship like, the two of you?
Marcel and I were close friends. We did a no number of things together. I remember touring Lawrence Livermore Laboratories with him. I worked on a number of projects that were, like looking at Out of the Outer Limits movie, one was a camera that came out of England, made back in the 1950s. It was patented by the European Patent Office, called the Delaware camera. What was fascinating about this camera that stood about 5.5 feet tall, it had tone oscillators, radionic dials, it had a chamber above with lenses and reflectors that went onto a photographic plate. You could take a drop of blood and tune in to the individual, and the sound oscillators and everything that you have to align it with the earth and everything, project it into space in three dimensions, a holographic projection, which was captured on the film. The silver emulsion on the film reacted to it, and thousands of photos were taken. One example, the thing that was, I'm very familiar with radionic instruments, and it acts as a tuning focus for the mind. This one had the ability to go forwards and backwards in the time. It had a time spiral in it. Like, this one woman was pregnant, and she was like 50 miles away, and you could see the fetus, and you can move it forward and backwards into time, seeing it progress. What's interesting is, I've been, ever since my involvement with, because my top secret clearance in the military and being involved as a disclosure witness, I've become friends with many of these people in the secret space program, talking about the med bed technology, and that how the med beds work is that it holographically takes a photo of you, and this the everything is holographic in the universe, and so when they take a photo, it goes back to the point of your conception. And so you have these slices of time, you could say, that go back in time. And so what they do is, say you lose your arm or something, or leg, or any situation, you can tune back through time before that happened, and then repattern, repair. I mean, it's like you're pairing, they oscillate basically the holographic pattern of that element back in time, and within a matter of hours, the arm is fully restored. I've talked to a number of people who have personally firsthand experienced this with the med beds.
Amazing.
Oh, it's incredible technology. We need to get rid of this. My great grandfather was the president of Homeopathic Medical Society. It was going up against the evil Rockefeller allopathic medicine, and the whole medical system is so corrupt. We need to replace this with new modalities that are not based on pharmaceuticals, but energetic means of healing people.
And so what you were saying about the mechanism, like where you worked on the football player's leg on the airplane, is sounds very similar. You're saying like reverting to a the information in a field that's going to like is a sort of a higher state of perfection that can then reset the sort of physical, the 3D. Is that
How the procedure works is that you and everything's done with love, because love is a at the highest densities, you could say, is more aligned with love. And as it comes down into the lower densities, there's less of an alignment of love. But everything's all connected. And so, in order to move energy without dissonance, there's always that connection with love. Doing something because you care about somebody. What in a it's kind of involved, but kind of in a condensed, simplified manner, the procedure is the person does you do deep breathing with the person and in sync with the person, and you go in into the thymus area, which acts as a witness for the whole body. You ask the person to, and usually if you have pain or you have a problem, it's pretty easy, you know, to tune into where the problem is. You ask to be shown where the, you know, you, the person who you're working with, you, they look in and see what is the root cause, where is the cause, you know, and to tune their mind on and lock onto that. And when they do, you start to amplify the field, and it becomes sometimes a little more painful, actually, because you're increasing energy into the area. You know, just like an electronic circuit, you start pumping a whole lot of energy into something that is not tuned, it's going to have resistance, right? And so, and through the breath is more than just breathing in and out oxygen and feeding hemoglobin and all that. It's more of a multidimensional information transfer that happens when we inhale and exhale. And so when you go in and ask to be shown where is the core problem, when you build up a couple of breaths and then there's a release breath, then it goes, release, you know, like that. And amazing transformations happen in at that point. And it's kind of like this big dramatic thing, you know, it's like, you know, like, all right, release, you know, and you have to fill in with love, you know, because love is the integrative force of the universe. And amazing transformations happen in that process of using the crystals.
Is there, I'm not sure on your site, is there like this process is outlined for people to go and learn themselves if they get a Vogel cut crystal or?
Yeah, in honor of Marcel, I put together marcelvogel.org. All those procedures, all the lab notes and everything with the Delaware camera also goes into the latest information that I, for the last year, I've been interacting from a being with another world who's a scientist on the science of crystals. And what we, what's amazing is my friend Elena Danan, she's a French archaeologist that worked in Egypt for some time. And when she was like 9 years old, she was abducted by the gray extraterrestrials, and she was had an implant put in her, and she was rescued by the Galactic Federation of Worlds, who they had to repurpose the implant. And now it's like a quantum communication device, so that her contact, a person who went in and saved her, his name's Thor Henry Redion, what he sees and hears, she sees and hears. And then what she sees and hears, he sees and hears. You know, so they have this quantum communication device. And this is how I did a show with her, and she said that Thorhan's younger brother is going to university in the Pleiades and understanding how to terraform planets, so they call it star making. And that he has a little bit of knowledge on, you know, the matrix and crystals, you know. And so I started April of last year, almost exactly a year to this date, I put forth a number of questions. And Elena and I were both kind of blown away by the information matched in so what Marcel Vogel was able to establish in a laboratory and quantify matched what Jenhan was saying. And so communication log is now at 100 pages of question, answer, question, answer. And they have to do it that way because of the Prime Directive. The Prime Directive is not just something that was in Star Trek. The Prime Directive is actually something that's actual and real. And it turns out, fascinatingly enough, that Leslie Leslie Stevens, yeah. He was the creator of the Outer Limits series. He was in Office of Naval Intelligence. His father was Admiral Leslie Stevens, who was head of psychological warfare with the Navy, and is contemporary with Admiral Rickel Botha, who was working with 29 Navy spies that were embedded into the Nazi secret space program that was going on in Antarctica, back in the 40s. So the Galactic Federation was working with Leslie Stevens and Gene Roddenberry, who was on the set with him, and gave him the whole script and everything for Star Trek and the prime directive. My friend Dr. Michael Sala, who's been researching this ever since he was inspired from the event I participated in at the National Press Club back in 2001, found out that he found this book that Elena had no idea that laid out the prime directive and it's exactly word for word, almost. So they're not here to save us and they didn't let us know. They want us to basically, save ourselves, and to become awake and aware of what's going on. And so the prime directive is like kind of a non-interference directive where they can't he like Jen Han can just can't tell me everything. I have to ask this very specific question, and he will specifically answer that question. But once in a while he'll drop a little extra thing that opens up another door. Like the
Am I correct that he there was like something that would have gone against the prime directive that he had to get special permission to reveal or release?
correct. In fact, I asked one question that apparently it raised a bunch of red flags. I was asking him about the In the quartz crystal lattice, you have the piezoelectric effect, where you have basically like six-pointed stars, and the charge triads, they have a positive and negative in the middle, and when the physical pressure is put on a crystal, it creates a voltage offset. It's called like your cigarette lighters that makes a spark, from the physical pressure. I asked him about that being a dimensional portal, and he said, "This is one of the things in the prime directive that we're not, supposed to." So he had to get special permission, and then what Marcel didn't know and would have loved to have known, he didn't realize it. But Marcel started out with a four-sided crystal like this. And then he felt that the energy spun and vortex, the energy does vortex. The crystals grow in the left and right-handed spirals naturally. And then they started, and there's a six-sided crystal. And then they went to, like, here's an eight-sided. And then they kept on going up to more sides, and here is a 16-sided. But what Marcel didn't realize is that he missed something when he went past the six-sided, because the crystal, according to Jen Han, the crystal needs to be cut in respect to the hexagonal core matrix of the crystal, in other words, as it grows in nature. So the alignment is not only on the C-axis, which is the growth axis of the crystal, so that both points on the crystal are aligned perfectly with this C-axis, and then the hexagonal core has to be aligned perfectly with the three axes of the hexagonal core. And but Jen Han was much more specific on the angles than Marcel. One's a 51.843 degree angle, or 52 is what they rounded off to, and the other one's a 60 degree angle. And what's interesting about the 60 degree angle is Jen Han said that the secret of the universe is a tetrahedral fractal holographic geometry. And that if you look at a tetrahedron, all the internal angles are 60 degrees. If you look at, you know, Egyptian obelisks, you know, the top of them, they're at 60 degrees. It's like the interface, it's like the flower of life and all the other. I met with Nassim Haramin back in 2001. I shared my ET experience. And he said to me, that's it. That's the structure of the matrix. And so it acts like a, it resonates with the geometry of the matrix. So what he didn't realize is that the two terminations on the crystal, they create a vortex, and they're counter rotating. One's going one direction, one going to the other direction, and they meet at a point. And at this point, if you stimulate the piezoelectric with you can do it with your fingers, you know, but it's not as effective as if you hook it up to a signal generator and put two silver electrodes on it. And this, in this area right here, is the where the vortex forms. It creates this singularity point, which opens up this vortex, and you're able to imprint with your consciousness directly into the planetary matrix and cause and effect. An interesting event happened recently that my French friends, Elena is in Ireland, and Jean Charles Morin, who was in the Solar Warden Secret Space Program, he was doing a video production and about his experience in Japan, and I was listening to some Japanese music, and he was thinking, oh, Elena would love to hear this. It's such beautiful music. He was thinking about her. Elena, on the other side of the planet in Ireland, just happened to have her function generator turned on and opened up the vortex in her crystal while she was feeding her two cats in the kitchen. And the cats perked up. They heard something down the hallway, and she went over there, and there's like this Japanese music coming out of the crystal.
Whoa.
And what I asked Jen Han about that, and he said that it opens up this connection in the void, which allows this type of connection. But it wasn't his specialty. His specialty is more on other aspects. In fact, he's kind of excited because he's on one of the Intergalactic Confederation ships, and they're 20,000 years ahead of their the Palladian science. You can imagine the Palladian sciences are like thousands of years ahead of us. And so there's this amazing science that we're just scratching the surface on. And the last communications were the construction of a frill generator. Frill is the term they use for the universal life source. They believe that they know that the quartz crystal is the purest element in the universe that's connected directly to the source, and so is water. They act as interdimensional bridges, and they're all part of a core fractal formula that, like love is as well, but of a more complex form. So they all interface with each other. And so what happens is that when you stimulate the quartz crystal lattice in a particular way that creates a torsion field with using two perpendicular coils, one of copper for the electromagnetic and one of silver for the etheric, what happens is the phase conjunction node that happens within the crystal creates this generation of frill. And the frill can be used for it, it's like healthy stuff, you know. It's like it helps your body. You can use it for plants will thrive on it. And so I'm working on with two scientists, you know, we're doing a CAD and trying to it's kind of complicated, the try to get these two coils at perfectly 90 degrees, you know, to each other, to interact with the crystal, and then take the frill that's emanating from it. And I've ordered some fused copper tubing and seven right-hand turns that will transfer it into the water. Mm-hmm. Marcel did that with wine. There was a winery in California that had this rot-gut wine, and he took a crystal and charged it with the essence of its fine finished wine. And seven right-hand turns, it was using stainless steel, transfer the vibrational essence from the quartz into the water, everything has water in it, you know, into the wine. And what happened was it turned thousands of gallons into a California award-winning wine, but, you know, you couldn't really mark it and say, oh, it's been crystal enhanced, you know, but... you know, was able to establish that method was able to be transferred into the water. There's an interesting relationship between the geometry of the molecular intermolecular bonding angles of quartz and that of water, and that in quartz it's like 52 degrees, and in water it's the angular harmonic multiples of that, of 26 degrees. And 104.5, almost 52 degrees, is slightly off. But what happens is, what I've noticed in my research is that I call it angular harmonic resonance, where you have an angle that's a multiple of an angle. And there is similar to like in electronics, you know, where you have a signal and you're going to have odd and even order harmonics. You know, I used to be a broadcast engineer, and we had I took care of a 151,000 watt transmitter, and one of the harmonics was being on a, there was a structure that had a parasitic resonance with the second harmonic, and we had to identify where it was and short it out. And what happens is the music and everything that's playing on the fundamental will be played on the harmonic. And so information is transferred, you know, harmonically.
So with the seven turn thing and the sort of attunement of the, you know, worse wine became better wine, could we take holy water and sort of attune like an entire river to holy water?
Yeah, you can. You know, there was an experiment Marcel did with, he got from Hungary, from a sacred spring. He said he's never seen, the energetic signature was off the chart. He took a big vat of bulk water, you know, unstructured water, took a single drop of that sacred spring water into the vat of bulk water. Now, every single drop in there had that same energetic, because water will mirror, and the higher forms the lower. Like I mentioned earlier, the lower doesn't form the higher. If you take that vat of water that is all structured, right, has that same signature, and you take some unstructured water and put a drop into that, that unstructured drop will become structured. It won't unstructure the whole thing. So it mm-hmm. shows that it's kind of interesting that it's like our thoughts in the matrix, in the planetary matrix. When you have a higher vibrational thought, it influences. We did an experiment, Elaine and I, where we had She has, 110,000 subscribers. We had about 1,700 people live with her crystals. And so what we did was this experiment, taking the information of both Marcel and Junhan, and had everybody go through a visualization of a beautiful positive timeline, where the dark elements were taken care of, the new technologies released, and the world is this beautiful situation. So we took everybody through that visualization, and then everybody had their crystals, and then they fully formed that in their consciousness, and everybody at the same time projected that into the crystal. And, without crystals, it's been scientifically established that, square root of 1% starts this kindling effect of, which mm-hmm. is, 8 billion people on the planet. It's like less than 9,000 people start this effect. And more people, of course, the better. And what happened was somebody was monitoring the Schumann resonance and there was a huge spike on it. And we find out there's this reciprocal relationship between the Schumann resonance is like they dub it the Earth brainwave because it's almost like an EEG pattern and operates within the frequencies of human brainwaves. And so there's this reciprocal relationship between the minds on the planet and the planet itself. And it created the spike. So I believe that the working with the crystals act as a way to enhance that by amplifying the connection, the coupling of it.
Speaking of Nassim Haramein and the Schumann resonance, I interviewed I'm blanking on the name. He made those Thrive documentaries. Anyway, he was with Haramein and a bunch of those arc crystals in the Great Pyramid, and they did an overnight sort of meditation, and mm-hmm. The next day got a call from the Russian geospatial agency. They're like, basically it seemed like you guys set off a huge nuclear bomb or caused an earthquake. We had such a huge signal, and they're like, what were you doing? And I said, oh, we're just meditating with these arc crystals in the pyramid.
Interesting. Yeah, well, inside the pyramid, oh my God, what a way to amplify.
Okay, so there's a bunch of things that you've mentioned that I want to some crumbs. Oh,
I just wanted to mention quickly in the 1980s and 90s, I worked with Dr. Robert Beck, who would. And he did some work with the CIA and things. He gave me some papers, and somebody broke into my house, and it was the only thing they stole was the documents that he gave, from the CIA. But essentially, back in the 70s, it was called the Russian Woodpecker, where the Russians were sending signals that would heterodyne on our 60 hertz. They're on 50 hertz grid, on 60 hertz grid, and would fall within the psychoactive window and started affecting people. Now he traveled all around the planet and measured kahuna, medicine men, different things, and found that when they were in a working state of consciousness, they were at the 7.83 hertz Schumann resonance, and their left and right hemispheres were synced perfectly together and increased in amplitude. And when I was working with the Navy electronics, I was working with this Navy captain, and we were working on the satellite equipment then, and he would wrap these things up in his sleep. We do it all the time, right? And I was building these different oscillators that can tune down to 1/100th of a hertz. And I didn't realize I accidentally put it on the frequency that causes the left and right hemispheres to desynchronize, causing spatial disorientation, right? Hmm. The CIA has these little pins that if you ever get hit with it, they simulate the Earth's resonance so that it overrides an external signal, because you can disable people by sending that frequency. And I had the frequency counter on period measurement than frequency, and so I didn't know what frequency was. It was a perfect double blind experiment. The captain was trying to wrap this equipment, and he was like so disoriented, it was comical. He threw his hands down in the side and said, "What the hell's going on here?" And then I looked up at the there and I switched it back to frequency. Oh my God, it was like a perfect double blind, and so I did this work with Dr. Robert Beck, who substantiated a lot of this with the Schumann resonance. I just want to share with you.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, there's more there. So I'm gonna go all the way back to the beginning. You walked into Marcel Vogel's and he said, "Are you from another planet? Or you're from another planet?
That was the first thing he ever said to me.
Are you?"
I don't have any recollection of I'm Jenhan has apparently scanned me, and they know I was a scientist in Atlantis in a past life. I don't remember anything about that. But I don't know.
Have you ever been curious about, I don't know, doing like a hypnotic regression or a past life regression to see some of your other previous lives?
The last time I did that was in 1977, and that brought about that ET interaction, which Elena described the being as being an emitter, which is one of the Council of Five, and they're a benevolent. They kind of look like grays, but they don't have like no nose. They have a little cute nose, and they have big eyes and large cranium, and incredible amount of love coming out of its eyes. But no, I haven't. I've kind of backed off since then.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Any particular reason?
They just have enough to process and deal with my current reality here on Earth.
And I also wanted to ask you, sort of what you're what's motivating you these days? Like why are you doing the work that you're doing?
I feel like the whole planet has been duped, and I spent 10 years after I gave my testimony in Washington with the other witnesses, which we were backed by 500 witnesses. We were revealing, bases on the other side of the moon, 57 different species, present CIA directors being denied access, that we've had faster than light craft built back in the 50s, and the mainstream media completely sanitized that from the public's awareness. Myself being an ex-ABC newsman when I was a broadcast engineer, I took it was like the place was packed, 22 cameras in the back row. I didn't understand what was going on. And CBS wanted to do an interview, and I said that we have the scientists that can prove we have zero point energy. We don't need nuclear oil and coal. They promised absolutely. I said I wouldn't do this unless I could say that on the air. And they said, "Oh, I'm sorry, the higher executives made me cut that part out." And we know that the higher executives are, from the intelligence community. So, a media company out of Hollywood wanted me to write an article on the control, being a witness and an ex-ABC newsman, the control of our perceptions, through the mainstream media on the UFO topic. And so I gladly accepted. The only way I could, I didn't know what Operation Mockingbird was, in 2001. And so I started putting together all these witness testimonies that I was aware of. I mean, we had 500 witnesses, that were backing us,
Wow.
all each one of us willing to testify under oath, penalty of perjury, breaking national security, and I started back to the beginning of the 20th century, looking at all the leaked, authenticated, classified documents, all the witness testimonies, and I started plugging it in. That was the only way for me to comprehend what happened. Why is the solution to the world being suppressed? And then I started to realize what happened. And if you go back to the history, it's like the most bizarre science fiction movie plot you ever. And it keeps its own best secrecy because the real truth is so far from our indoctrinated reality. We've been taught in school. Turns out the Nazis before the end of World War II had the plan to create a matrix of perception. They call it Weltanschauungskrieg, which they did. They controlled the media. They controlled education. They rewrote the history of World War II, 1946. Hollywood, the whole matrix of perception. So through generational indoctrination, we don't know the full truth of what happened, and that the Nazi SS basically entered into an alliance with a reptilian race called the Draco of the Sakaar Empire in Antarctica. It was giving them advanced technology, which violated the prime directive. And so in the interest of balance, what happened was the Galactic Federation of Worlds came in and worked with the U.S. Navy, who, it goes into a long story with longer than we have time for, but basically during the Eisenhower administration, who wanted to have go on television and radio and release this, that he got circumvented by the MJ-12 group, who entered into an agreement with the Nibu and Draco alliance, and the whole thing went, deep black at that point. In fact, in 1993, I traveled to Area 51, and the first time Bob Lazar ever was meeting with a group of researchers. No recordings were allowed whatsoever, but I had it on my camcorder on my lap and recorded 2 hours of him hitting with questions, which has been consistent over the years. But that meeting created the base, Area 51, went into a complete lockdown, and a classified NRO, National Reconnaissance Office, advisory went out to all their different connections. And somehow Dr. Stephen Greer, and in the same year, 1993, he was meeting with the CIA director, William James Com James James Comey. Yeah, no, wait, James Woolsey. I'm sorry, had a blank there. The CIA director Clinton wanted to find out about the UFO situation, but the CIA director is being denied access. Every single president, CIA director, head of intelligence ever since Eisenhower lost control back in the 50s, which he tried to warn the American public kind of cryptically.
Right.
What happened was Dr. Stephen Greer, who he brought into a 3-hour meeting, the CIA director saying to him, "I know the subject's real. I'm trying to figure out why the hell I can't gain access to it." And so Dr. Greer met with military advisors to start collecting witnesses. I was like the 100th videotaped witness that he collected, starting in 1993.
Oh,
and
wow.
So somehow Dr. Greer was able to acquire that NRO document about Area 51, which had a distribution list that was revealing the unacknowledged special access programs that Bob Lazar was working on, reverse engineering the craft, and brought it to a Pentagon meeting with the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Vice Admiral Thomas Wilson, along with astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell and Commander Will Miller. And the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he was denied access. In fact, he was threatened that he would see an early retirement and lose rank if he didn't drop it immediately. He was mad as hell and told Dr. Greer, "If you can get your people," he knew he had started collecting witnesses back in 93, "to go before, that are willing to testify under oath, willing to go before the mainstream media, you have my permission. This group is illegal," quote unquote. And so that's what brought about the event that I participated in back in 2001, over 2 decades ago. And the public is still, they're seeing little glimpses here and there of information, putting it together. But the media is definitely the enemy of the people. They have been, deceiving the American public for a long time toward an agenda that is not in the interest of the people of the world.
So in 2001, when you brought, when you had all these people coming together and you thought this was going to just, boom, change the world because this information would get out.
I thought it was a part of a world-changing event. I mean, I couldn't believe the other witnesses that what we were disclosing to the people of the world, and 22 cameras, the place packed with reporters. You know, how could this not change everything?
And so you mentioned that one TV show that you went on where they like, then they took out the clip later on.
Yeah. CBS Channel 2, Los Angeles.
Okay. All those cameras and all those reporters, were they all just not recording, or were they all told not to report on this? Like what happened?
What happens is, you know, everything got recorded, right? But when it gets back to the corporate office for the editing room, what they do is they selectively cut out. There were so many explosive statements that were in the whole thing. They totally omit the witness testimonies. And they talk about Dr. Greer. And Dr. Greer is, you know, saying, "These objects of extraterrestrial origin have been tracked on radar, going thousands of miles per hour, stopping and making right-hand turns." Cut right after that. "And we've already studied these technologies and have developed in the United States, Great Britain, and elsewhere, you know." And so, you know, they very selectively take out. So what happens is all this incredible testimony, it gets boiled down to, when it gets on CNN, CBS, and everything, it makes it sound as though it's what's called, what the intelligence community called, a limited hangout. In other words, they only hang out the part that's safe, that won't compromise their agenda. And so the perception that the guy coming back from a hard day at work, drinking a beer or whatever, he gets the impression that they're wanting to have a congressional hearing on simply the reality of UFOs. You know, he's collected hundreds of military intelligence witnesses. And so that's the impression it goes for like a minute and a half or something that they covered. I traveled across the United States in the major cities every time with
Dr.
Greer.
But how is no, you know, legitimate reporter just really interested in covering this? Because I know journalists, and they're relentless, right? They, when they get a whiff of a story, they dig and dig and dig. So surely not everyone was compromised, right? Every journalist that was there, right? Your independent journalists.
If you don't follow the line of the higher executives before, this is like top on the list. You know, the higher executives in the media are connected with the intelligence community.
Sure.
And if you, it won't, it, they may be some disgruntled journalists, and if they raise too much of a stink, you know, out they go. And so if you want to keep your job, you follow the line that the higher executives are, you know, the lady who was interviewing me on CBS, she was almost in tears. She was like, "I know, I promise. I never had this happen before, you know, that the higher executives maybe cut that part out." You know, because I said they travel all the way down to San Diego from L.A. to interview me for about 45 minutes. And I said a lot of things, but I said, "I'm not, unless I can say this little 10-second statement." You know, and afterward, you know, because of my technical background, and since we weren't able to have a congressional hearing, I volunteered. Dr. Greer set up a corporation. We had a database of about 300 scientists that were civilian and inventors. And so for 10 years, I was meeting with scientists and inventors, and just one nightmare after another, you know, CIA coming in, threatening them, people being murdered. After 10 years, I just gave up on it. It's until these control elements are no longer operational, these technologies, I mean, there's over 6,000. There's a secret system in the patent office called Sensitive Application Warning System. If any of your, it has to do with free energy, anti-gravity, super conductivity at room temperature, you know, any things on this list, you automatically get a national security order, which states that your invention has been deemed to be a detriment to the national security of the United States. Therefore, you cannot share it with anybody. I just recently did a show with Dr. Michael Sell, and I brought in one of these scientists who, you know, had his cars blown up. He was thrown in prison. He had developed a based on Nikola Tesla's design, a little small, inexpensive unit producing about 300 watts of power. He had 63,000 of these made in Japan, and I had to disbar the whole thing. You don't.
You don't go. Did they confiscate them all from Japan, or
they confiscated everything?
Wow, man! So this guy was pretty close to disseminating free energy.
Yeah, a brilliant scientist. In fact, he's got a number of that he hasn't got a national security order on yet. You know, inventions that can pull energy and can create up to a megawatt of power. But, you know, the stuff that they have in the secret space program, you can imagine with unlimited funding and some of the most brilliant minds and even assistance from off-planet cultures that are thousands of years in advance to develop the technologies that they have in the secret space program that seem make any science fiction movie seem kind of weak, you know, compared to what they have.
So you're saying this guy's inventions are great, but they're the ones in the secret space programs are much more powerful, generate a lot more energy.
Yeah, in the secret space program, they're far developed, you know, more than and there's some brilliant minds on the planet, you know, some brilliant scientists that come up with incredible inventions. But you know, but you can imagine if you had unlimited funding and, you know, and collaboration to put together some advanced technology, that I'm sure they have solutions. According to my friend Elena, who recently, and it sounds bizarre for a lot of people, but she goes off planet with Thorhan on a scout ship. And she was able to go inside. The moon is hollow, and there's huge manufacturing facilities that are making these holographic med beds to be released to the world, and anti-gravity vehicles, free energy devices, all this stuff. I'm imagining that ever since it's kind of interesting that what Elena was saying is that the regressive extraterrestrials, the grays and the reptilians, have been removed out of our solar system back in 2021. And it's interesting that a Navy-funded Arlington Institute think tank, Greg Braden, just had John Peterson, rather, on, and three independent sources verified that these regressive extraterrestrials have been removed from our solar system, and that in other words, the minions on Earth that were the dark elements on Earth, the human element that was having this support system, you know, from these dark extraterrestrials, they're no longer have that, though they're on their own. And right now the deep state is basically, you know, pulling out all stops. And I think the people of the world are starting to awaken more. And I think once we can get a certain critical mass of awakening of the reality that has been hidden from the world, and we understand that, I think, you know, the Nuremberg type trials would start going on for crimes against humanity, all of the human trafficking, child trafficking, off planet and on planet, and all this would be exposed and ceased, and these technologies released, and a new world could be experienced on this planet.
So given that you've already experienced like the system shutting you guys down, trying to disclose all this, you know, in 2001, to like, oh wow, there's med beds being manufactured on the moon and free energy devices that could be dropped in at any moment. How close do you think that is? Like, how, what do we need to do to make that happen? Like, because you kind of have a good sense of what we're up against and like how the tides are right now. What's your sort of projection of the next few years? Like, when are we going to get the good stuff?
That's the question everybody's asking. You know, it's like, when? When's this going to happen? How much longer do we have to put up with this? You know, the timetable is unknown. To give a date is, you know, it doesn't work because it's in dynamic flux, changing, you know, constantly. It feels like it's moving. Thorhan just met in a underground military complex in Raven Rock, and gave it to General Van Herk, who's head of the North American command, this device that gives the whole plan for disclosure. There's a Earth alliance made up of Earth humans that's working in alliance with the Galactic Federation of Worlds, that, you know, the head of the Israeli space program mentioned, that, you know, President Trump's aware of, and that they're not quite ready yet to be revealed to our population. You know, a little more time is needed for us to be ready for contact. But the plans for disclosure are in work right now. And so what will probably be happening is more of the Confederation ships will be seen in the skies. More people will start to see it and acclimate to this. As you can tell in the mainstream media, you know, is talking about UFOs a lot, but it all is putting the, you know, threat narrative with that. You know, one of the things that was revealed at the 2001 press club is Von Braun, Wernher von Braun, said that was one of their plans, is to have a false flag alien threat, you know, or to be contrived. It was interesting that one of the things on the long list of false flag events, the next one was terrorists. And this was May of 2001. Everybody knows what happened in September of 2001. Can't give a date, but indications are that the disclosure plan, working with the Galactic Federation, and all the good guys are here in the solar system. And the bad guys are out, have been removed, you know, according to a Navy think tank. You know, I feel optimistic.
And you're concentrating your efforts right now on making this physical frill generation device. What else are you spending your time on besides, you know, coming on our podcast?
Yeah, with Jenhan Iredion, it started out with understanding some of the scientific basics of, you know, this tetrahedral fractal geometry and the interface of consciousness and how consciousness projects geometric patterns that interface with this matrix that we're in, and that one of the things is how to clear the crystal of all the previous imprints. The crystal needs, if you're going to be working with crystals, you have to clear it out, because or else it'll taint the whatever you're doing. And so I'm currently working on, there's like four different methods that do this, and only one is really practical for the general public. So I'm working on that currently.
What is that method?
It's using a 4096 hertz that brushes in the three axes of the crystal. That what happens is it resonates the crystal lattice structure and breaks the bonds of any other patterns that are locked into the lattice. So it essentially erases and clears the crystal out. Now the trouble is I'm finding that these tuning forks. They're not exactly on frequency that we use. And so I believe in order to effectively resonate the lattice, it has to be at exactly on the frequency. But I'm getting that. I'm currently working on confirming that, while at the same time working with these two scientists on building the coil structure for the frill generation of the crystal, which has implications for not only regeneration for the human body, but also could be used for irrigation, to feed, since we're having so many issues with our food supply lately. Mm-hmm. It'd be good that people are able to grow productively, food that's nutrient. I understand they're wanting to put what they inject in people into our food. Biden just signed a executive order to allow that to start happening, and an informed consent is not something that they require to do. So, all these things need to be brought to the public's attention of these elements that are going against humanity.
If you got the frill generator to work, are there other applications as well?
The other one was telepathic communication through opening up the vortex within the crystal, that through the
in like with fact, the Japanese music.
Yeah, exactly. Like Genhan had to get that was the second thing, that he had to get permission. He had to get clearance in order to share. But
now, could you use that to establish like permanent telepathic links? Like, could you use the crystal to, like, if we were to practice, using the vortex in the crystal, and then could we like turn the crystal off and keep that connection, do you think?
It has the potential. It has the, I don't have enough information as yet to, fully elaborate on that. But from what I understand, when you're able to go into this open vortex that connects to the singularity, that's connected to everything, it acts as a connect. It's similar to how the quantum devices, like the device that Elena has, that communicates with them. They use quantum, they don't use electromagnetics like we do. They use and their power generation on their planet Era that Janhan shared with me. They have these giant crystals that are, they're talking 6 feet tall, that have this wire configuration that generates a torsion field and connects to these pyramidal structures that transmit. They see all of their, when we were talking about wires, he didn't understand what we were talking about, because they don't use wires. Everything's wirelessly. Power and everything that they use that is generated. Now, we can't go into, obviously, power generation yet, until the deep state elements are taken down, as I had 10 years experience with.
Could we like, let's say Genhan, who is a Pleiadian, or what's his?
He's from the planet Era. He's a Pleiadian.
Okay. Let's say he like dropped you a working model. Like, you woke up one day in your laboratory, you just had the device because he left it as a present for you. You could then just start to copy and manufacture it and sort of disseminate it person to person, right? Without anyone knowing.
No, it's been authorized for me to be able to share this with all the Terrans, they call them, the people of Earth. So I can freely share all the information. In fact, all the notes are on marcelvogel.org. There's a link there, and you can see the PDF with 100 pages of questions and answers. So I'm authorized to be able to share this information. So he's not going to drop, you know, teleport something in my office
Okay,
and
but so what I'm saying is, like, you could circumvent the deep state. Like you said that we have to wait until the deep state is no longer suppressing this, but you're already talking about it, right?
Yeah, well, it's quite apparent the deep state's alive and well on planet Earth. And you know, there's far more of us than it is of them, and
Well,
it
that's what I
has
mean.
to.
You haven't been shut down disseminating this information.
No, I have not been. I have not been. I'm not touching certain areas. You know, I won't go into energy production. Energy production would be very dangerous for me to get into. I'm just what I'm doing is practical healing methods and different applications that crystals can be used for the benefit of humanity. If, as Jen Han said, if it's not, I'm going to be in trouble. So, you know, I'm just basically doing benevolent applications with the use of crystals, not anything that would threaten the power structure that the deep state is controlling, other than the consciousness of helping to awaken more people.
I remember seeing a diagram where there's like purple crystals around that same generator. Do you know what those are? Like, what is the complete
Oh,
frill
what
generator
Elena
look like?
saw. She saw
Yeah.
that. There was like I think six purple light crystals that were at a different angle and was feeding it into a pyramid. She physically saw that, and so she was, you know, recreating the image. And I don't understand the mechanisms of how the crystals interfaced with the larger crystal.
Gotcha. So the future research or further information needed. Is that right?
Yeah, it's you know, their technology is so far advanced. So I'm kind of doing a kindergarten level here of understanding the crystal technology.
What do you still want to ask Jenhan? Like, what are your sort of burning questions about this?
Well, Elena and I are planning on doing you know, if you go to Elena Danan, DANAAN.org, her website, going to be doing a series of crystal classes and how to utilize the crystals. And some of them are going to be based on not only Dr. Marcel Vogel, but what the latest information with Jen Han on healing techniques that people can use with a crystal. And different applications. One of the first classes is going to be on how to completely clear the crystal, the previous imprints, because you have to do that first. And then how to use the crystal on another person or how to do it on yourself. And then a lot of it's going to go into theory of, you know, my two scientist friends are hitting me with all these questions you can imagine, to understand the physics of how they do it on planet Era that's different than how they do it on planet Earth. So, we will probably explore that.
Does Planet Era have the same physics that we do?
Totally, totally different, or thousands of years in advance. You know, or they live, their average lifespan is, you know, 900 to 1500 years. Our average lifespan on planet Earth, last time I checked, was 75 years. You know, I'll be 74 this next week, you know, coming up.
Whoa, you don't look 74.
Yeah, I try to Have a good diet.
Maybe you're already using your crystals. Have you?
I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I think it's being in a harmonious, loving state and eating organic food and all that helps.
You mentioned this term planetary matrix earlier. I was wondering if you could expand on what that means.
Yeah, the planetary matrix. Thorhan, I mean, not Thorhan, but Jenhan rather, knows a lot about this, being a terraformer. It is this matrix in which all life is interconnected to on a planet. Like say, he said, for example, if you were to use a crystal from Mars, it wouldn't have. Doesn't have a resonance with Earth. It only resonates with Mars. If you have Earth crystals, it resonates with the planetary matrix. Our bodies, our DNA resonates with Earth. Our bodies are made up of the Earth. So we're part of this planetary matrix. So we have the ability to. The planetary matrix affects us, and we have the ability to affect it.
And but you were talking about like nested platonic solids as being part of the planetary matrix.
I'm sure that that's part of it. As I researched over the decades, I find that the platonic solids are in planetary bodies, the planetary orbits. There's a fractal relationship from a proton to the universe. That's a scaled fractal relationship. Our DNA has this dodecahedral geometry to it. Even the periodic table of elements has this tetrahedral geometry that relates to the different elements that we have. And it's interesting on the secret space program on they have what's called replicators. You want to replicate a cheeseburger and a chocolate shake. It's like you can record and play back. It's amazing the sciences that we will, our. Our whole system's been infiltrated and corrupted. Our education system, science, we're not taught the full physics that these scientists are fully aware of that or have been working in these other projects that the public's not aware of.
We've been talking about quartz. There's a lot of other crystals that people use in metaphysical practices. Are there any other significant crystals you've come across?
Quartz is the most universal. The other crystals that have, like amethyst, rose quartz, garnet, diamonds, rubies, emeralds, they all have their particular geometries within them that have their own qualities, but they're specific to those particular qualities. Whereas quartz has a universal matrix that is resonant to everything. It's like water. Water is also resonant to everything. As they dug down in Antarctica to these ice core samples, they found that in these ice core samples that every single one of the seven major classes of crystallography are exhibited in water, showing that it has this ability to be universally resonant with all the geometries.
All the crystal forms, is that what you mean?
Yeah, in water as it turns into ice, as it transitions, it can form in different geometries. And those geometries they found to be across the entire spectrum that we know of in the world of crystallography.
Gotcha. So water and quartz are sort of intimately linked because of what the, how they can sort of bridge dimensions and how they're universal sort of.
Yes, they both act as interdimensional bridges.
Okay, interesting. Anything else that interacts with quartz and water in the same way or functions the same way?
Water, water is a profound study, when you understand the geometry of it. And it's interesting, both water and quartz are both hexagonal, right? And this hexagonal structure appears to be the basic fundamental of the matrix, which is, tetrahedral and hexagonal.
That's really interesting. Every time I do a psilocybin journey, I see like a honeycomb. I start like getting a lot of I always attribute it to bees, but it's like I can see the honeycomb sort of structure beneath. I hadn't put that together before.
Yeah, that's the structure of the matrix.
Really interesting.
In fact, it's written about in some of the ancient writings. Madame Blavatsky in The Secret Doctrine talked about the ancient stanzas of Dizian, whereas the matrix is this hexagonal matrix, which has the six sides, but in the center is spirit. It was where it emanates from the. From the and it's interesting that was kind of related to that question I asked Jenhan about the center of the hexagon. There is something very special that's happening there.
Yeah, interesting.
I love your questions, by the way, Derek.
I'm
They're
just yeah.
great.
I'm sketching out the if you have those two triangles, right, then you have the hexagon in the middle and you have six points, but you also have six vortices of interaction. So you essentially have like 12 points there, and then you have a point in the middle and it's 13. There's something there. I'm gonna have to think about that. I feel like I've covered a lot of the stuff that I wanted to ask you about. Oh, I'd love to hear a little bit of, I saw you were telling me you live off grid in the kind of in the wilderness, and I think I saw that you live in a dome that you built. I'd love to just hear a little bit about your living situation and yeah, it sounds kind of experimental in a way, or trying to weave in a lot of your other research and interests into your
Well,
home.
when I was working for the government on all their electronic equipment, I was trying to plot my escape. I wanted to be self-sufficient and not have to hustle, worry about, getting for money. And so my dream was to be able to be completely self-sufficient out in nature and not needing to. So after I did some work, I had an internet business, and I was able to figure out search engine algorithms and was able to make a little blast of money in order enough to purchase some land. And so I came up to Oregon and found a good deal on a piece of property that was up on top of a mountain, and I ordered this kit that this geodesic cement. It was the first cement geodesic dome in Oregon, and I met my wife up here, and then we both worked together, and we put it together. 300-pound triangles. Yeah, they had to bring a crane and everything and cement the whole thing together. And so, initially I just came up in an Airstream trailer. We lived together in this Airstream trailer for a few years, and I've set up, a solar array, and I had internet connection, and it was great, because I don't have any water bills. I have a well that's powered by some solar panels that keep us with water. I got plenty of power, electrical power. Our heating we do with dead wood on the property. We have a boiler that feeds a radiant floor to keep us warm in the winter. In the summertime, we route the irrigation water through the floor, cools it, and an evaporator cooler. And so we have no heating or cooling bills. And because we're on top of a mountain, we're a relay for the valley down below for internet. So we send the internet signal down. So we don't have any internet bill, no water bills, no electric bills, no heating bills, no cooling bills. Our you know, phone, we use Skype, which is like about $30 a year. So basically, and we're growing our own food. We built a greenhouse and we're using these growing towers that use vermicomposting, and each tower yields about 50 plants, and we got all six of them. And so we're producing our own food, which is that's our main expense that we have is food. But all the rest of the bills have been eliminated pretty much. And so we live like millionaires on a beggar's budget, you could say.
So your food budget is like supplementing what you can grow, like when you go to the grocery and get extra food, is that?
Right. Yeah. There's nothing. That's the medicine chest, you know, nothing like the life force in live organic food that hasn't been tainted and messed with to keep you healthy.
And so how about community? If you're outside of town, like one thing that I really prize is just being able to run into people as I'm out and about on my day. Well, how's that been for you?
My wife and I are both hermits. so we love being isolated away from everybody. You know, so
okay.
It works out really well that way. But, we have about 22 acres. I have a security system all around, you know, just in case any crazies come. And, we have just a few choice friends that, rarely we interface with. But yeah, that's most of our social life is unfortunately on the internet.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. We put on pause, but for the last couple of years we were building a community, shopping for land, sort of trying to get about 25 to 50 friends together to build a little mini village. It'd be like a sort of a scaled up version of your place, you know. Oh, but
if you ever need any advice, I've mastered the art of living well without monthly expenses.
Amazing. Yeah. I saw our project as it's kind of like, let's see what we can incorporate, you know, like we're all encountering really amazing ideas and either in building or in governance or food growing. So like, let's build a community, but let's also use it as a canvas for experimentation.
Oh yeah. Like Buckminster Fuller said, you know, don't fight the existing reality, create a new one. The old one becomes obsolete and everybody moves over to it.
That's the vision. So we're having a kid in June. So we kind of put the project on pause until we can devote more attention to it. But
I totally, you know, when these energy devices get released, anti-gravity vehicles, med beds, you know, we can extend our lives, you know, hundreds of years. And you can populate remote places on the planet. There's plenty of places where you can have, you know, with you can generate, you know, your own food, water, power, everything with a little small energy device that to give you multiple kilowatts. And you don't even need roads, so
yeah,
you can go anywhere. I totally recommend doing alternative, you know, housing, so that, you know, the insulation and everything is optimal, making the most of what resources you have, for heating and cooling.
I had you mentioned your house was cement or concrete. I heard
It's
of
like an
this.
R40 insulation. It's about 7 inches of foam on the inside and about an inch of concrete on the outside. And so the floor acts as a huge thermal mass that, once it's heated, it sustains for quite a while.
I heard of this bioceramic sort of
Oh,
like
right.
you can it's kind of like creating bones, but you're using most of the carbon from the atmosphere and then sort of 3D printing this bioceramic into geodesic shapes, and you can make these modular homes from them. That seemed like a really cool concept to you could start with a small home, right? And then you could just like kind of add blink blink blink, add nodes
Oh
onto
yeah,
it.
I'm a big believer in tiny homes. Tiny homes, you can do it so right so that you have all your basic necessities. You think about it, it's so much less the heat and cool, less to keep clean. You have so many benefits of having plus less cost of materials, less taxes if you're for square footage. And you can always expand, you can always build a little barn if you have a large collection of stuff you need to, put. So,
For your
yeah,
laboratory.
right. You love about the lab.
Yeah. Although I'm a huge fan of chateaus and like really nice big houses. Like it's a personal passion of mine. So I'm trying to figure out how to weave those two together.
You can do it. I've done it and I absolutely recommend it and love it totally.
Let's see if I have. I think that kind of wraps up a lot of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you want to make sure you touch on?
I don't know. We covered some ground. I think we're good. I'm trying to, nothing comes to mind that we.
Where would you like to point people to find out more about you or your work?
It's not a professional site. It's just when that media company wanted me to write an article, I started, decided to put it onto the web, and then I just kept adding and adding to it. The webmatrix.net is a site that goes from the year 1900 to almost present day. I kind of like if people don't figure it out by the last year or two what's going on, then there's no sense in me really continuing on any further. It's just like it's never ending, the story, as it keeps going, and it gets more way more bizarre, if you haven't researched. It really keeps its own best secrecy because it just sounds too far-fetched for the average normal person to imagine, such things are going on.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks so much, Dan. It's been
Oh,
a
it's a
pleasure spending
pleasure.
time with you.
Pleasure. And yeah, I'll have to check out the latest versions of the Bianchi bicycle. It was my favorite. I loved my I used to s polish my stainless steel spokes and true my wheels, and I used to do like 25 miles a day and 50 to 100 on the weekends, and used to love that so much when I was in my teenage days.
Yeah, those bikes have always been good looking. And when I was a teenager, when I was 13, is when I started cycling. And we would, my other 13-year-old friend and I, we would go on these long sort of adventures, and it was like the first taste of real independence, right? Our parents didn't know where we were. We could just like pick a place and just go there. It's amazing. Yeah.
How cool.
And fantastic.
Oh,
Yeah, thanks so much, Dan. Great
my
to connect with
pleasure.
you.
Absolute pleasure, Derek.